Hey, what's happening? What's good? Tell me what's going on. I'm glad to be here with you today. My guest today is Solin Jimenez from Arena Metrics. This one's awesome because it is Solin's first podcast. She didn't tell me until we had finished recording either because, you know, usually I make a bigger deal out of these first-time podcast guests when it's their first podcast appearance. You know, I try to make it nice for people so they'll come back and do either the business of fun again or they'll do other ones because I like to make sure people are getting new and different ideas and like exploring a little bit, sharing their story a bit. So Solin is on the podcast today. But before we talk about my conversation with Solin and what Arena Metrics is up to, let me talk to you for a few minutes. First of all, yesterday, I'm recording the introduction for this on April 16th, 2024. On the 15th, tax day here in the United States, I shared a guest post, the very first guest post in the Talking Tickets newsletter with Brian Ralston. Brian's a friend of mine for years now. He's worked for the Heat, the Cavaliers, the NBA, the WNBA. He's worked in baseball. He's worked on boating. He's worked on all these really cool things. He brought an idea to me about group sales, which had lined up pretty nicely with some market research I'd been doing, talking to you, asking what you are really struggling with. And one of the big things you keep telling me is that group sales has been a problem. And I know that because of some of the people in the teams I work with. Group sales is something we talk about pretty regularly. The newsletter from Brian has been a big hit, been well received. And so my question to you is, who else would you like to hear from? What other people or positions or ideas do you want to hear? I am playing with the idea of creating one that is focused on perspectives in the secondary market, but I'm kind of open to what we will do next with that. It seems like a good thing because the newsletter, you read it. So I will share new and interesting things with you because you deserve it. It's not just me doing this for myself. I do it for you. So let me know. Send me an email, dave@davewakeman.com. Don't tell me you haven't already signed up for the newsletter. You can get it at talkingtickets.substack.com. Or you can send me an email at dave@davewakeman.com, and I will add you to the list because that's the kind of man that I am. Make sure you check out my website. It's davewakeman.com. There's some new stuff going up. I know I've talked to you about upcoming. I'm going to go to London in June and July. July 2nd. Jeez, it's so soon. It looks like the day I'm going to get together with you and have some drinks in London. I'm still working the thing out, but I will let you know I'm going to start putting together a few more regular podcasts. I just have to get my lazy behind together and put these things on the calendar. We are also looking at doing something in New York in September and then Sydney and Melbourne in November. I'm going to get all that stuff loaded on the website now. I have to get off my ass and do it. Okay, so keep an eye on the davewakeman.com site to find out more. So back to Solin and Arena Metrics. Like I mentioned at the very, very start, this is the first time that she has had an opportunity to be on a podcast. I was like, oh, that's great. I wish she had told me before, but we'll talk to her. I was busting her chops about that at the very end. One of the things, though, that I really was interested in talking with Solin about was culture, because she's French, but she's spent a lot of time outside of France, and now she's returned to France, and her job brings her to the United States and the North American market a lot. And culture, I think, is very important because there's many different lenses you can see culture through. There's the business environment. There's obviously the culture of culture, right? Arts and performing arts and theater and things like that. Those things were interesting. I also thought that because of her background, it would allow us to find out some and see some unique insights and learn a little bit about how the insights that you gain when you work for an international company and you work outside of the home base of that company and then you come back, what you can learn from there and how it helps you become a more effective salesperson. More and more, my business takes me all over the world, probably You might be in a similar position where your business takes you to a different culture and you kind of have to understand how to juggle that relationship. So that I thought was interesting. Also, I think Arena Metrics is doing some pretty interesting things. You know, and because of the way that the platform set up, I think that there were some lessons that we could all learn, no matter if we're sports or arts or whatever, lens that we're looking at it through, that we can apply, right? Because one of the things that I found, have been finding more and more interesting is how can I bring you different ideas from different parts of the industry and different parts of the world that you can apply in your specific situation, right? Because I tell you about it, you know, the importance of gathering ideas from all over the place, but I don't necessarily know how well I'm doing at giving you that. So I want to try to do that a little bit more. But this is a really fun conversation. It was really nice to get to know Celine a lot better. And I think you're going to dig it. So here is my conversation with Celine Jimenez on the Business Lunch. I would like to welcome Celine Jimenez to the Business of Fun podcast. Celine, what's up?
What's up? Thank you for the invitation.
No, thank you for coming. I see that, like, you know, we've had a chance to talk a couple times, and I finally see that now I have broken through, and I've got you, like, really, like, smiling broadly and, like, laughing at my bad jokes, so this is going to be great. So I finally win. So, but thank you for doing this. This is going to be, I'm excited to talk to you. I'm excited to learn about what Arena Metrics is doing. But really, like, I think the big thing is I'm really excited to learn about you, because one of the things that we talked about when we were setting up this podcast is you thought that your perspective and, like, you know, the fact that you live in France now, but you had lived in the Netherlands for many years, and then you moved back, provided you a unique experience. And I just like learning about people and, like, how, you know, the cultures and the way those things impact people. So I want to start there, right? Because I know that, you know, you've had a chance to live in a bunch of different cultures. And I think the way you phrased it to me was, culture is everything. It's not just the way you work. It's the way you live. It's everything about you. Can you explain that to me?
Sure. So we have, what, 3-4 hours?
As long as you need. I'm here for you.
I mean, there is, of course, the culture of a country, and within the country you will have also different cultural trends. You will have the culture within a company, at the working place. And I think what's interesting about sales is that there is always this perception that we do sales very differently in a country from another. And actually, a common joke I have is that when we work on a market study, so we want to export a product in a new country, and we talk to people there and we ask, like, okay, how do we do sales in this country? Everybody will tell you, so in our country, networking is very important, and it's really about relationship, and it's really Spanish or really Danish or really Canadian, and all countries do that. So it's very interesting to see how some countries perceive this is very specific to our culture, but maybe it's something like all human beings have in common. And once you work in different countries, you realize, oh, they think it's very German, but actually I've seen that before. But then there are some other parts of the job or of your experience of doing your grocery or looking for flats where you saw this would be something universal. And actually, once you move to another country where the rules or the habits are different, then you're really surprised and you're like, oh, actually, it's not the same. And with sales, there will be different experiences. Maybe a common one would be about, do you start a meeting on time, and what do you do at the beginning of a meeting? Like, what is the breaking ice strategy, and how do you have small talk? And from a country to another, maybe there is this understanding of small talk is nice to build a relationship, but some people in certain cultures would prefer to do it at the beginning or at the end, and is it 2 minutes or 10? So all these differences are quite exciting. And yeah, as you mentioned, I've lived in different countries in the past 10 years, and now in the last 3 years in Anametrics, I've built an international development strategy, and it was very interesting to start that from abroad, even though I'm French. I grew up in this country, and Iron Matrix is based in France, so it was important to see there is a lot that I can read from the cultural background of the founders. But because I was based abroad for a while, I could also see where they are very Frenchy, and where maybe Dutch people or German people or from other countries will feel that and say, maybe I'm not super comfortable with it. And because I have both in me, I have this experience of living abroad, but I'm also still Frenchy enough to understand, then it was, I think, a good way to be a bit of an ambassador of both sides to say, okay, this French company maybe is a bit different to what you're used to, but look, maybe there is this and that that could be a nice one. Part of what they do is just business, and it doesn't matter if it's based in France. And there was also the other way to help my colleague and the internal culture within Ionometrics to go a bit more international and to some extent maybe to be a bit less Frenchy. And then there are all the cliches about, is the lunch break very long? So do we have nobody available for 2 hours every day? And do we have to reduce that? Do we start the meeting on time? Like, these are the usual things that are quite funny to talk about. But then there is even more about making a decision about how is hierarchy, is it important to talk to the founder or not? So there are a lot of like small details that you will go along in sales. And if you have built your whole sales career just in one environment, maybe you think you know all this very well. But if you would have to do it in a different country, you might be surprised where it works the same and where actually it's almost like a different job.
Yeah, no, that I think that's 100% right. I've learned that in the UK, all your business happens at the bar after about like five or six rounds, because, or at least that's with me. I can only speak for myself, and I found that, because I have a almost all of my business at this point is international. It's my ability to connect with people across cultures that helps. I guess I'm just one of my first jobs at the Paramount Theater, the Seattle Theater Group. God, I wish I remember the guy's name, but I don't. He said I have a friendly face, and so I think that translates across cultures, and so I end up getting along. And what and so this is leading into a question for you, which is like I find that a lot of it's much more similar than it is different, because even and I think this is to great consternation of my neighbor, because he's a German guy, and he goes, oh, the Irish are not a very friendly people, and he said the French not a very and he had all these lists of people that he didn't like from different countries that he thought were not friendly. And I was like going, gosh, I know all these French people and they love me, and I get like I have friends in France, I go to France, I go we go drink wine, it's great, and I was like in Ireland, I was like, oh my gosh, I can never like and so I was like, I just think that like I think if you have the right mentality, it's easier to bridge these gaps, which and so that's sort of my question to you, which is like, how do you bridge the gap, right? And where do you find yourself having to work harder to translate the vision you have in your head into the some into something culturally relevant for somebody else? Because a lot of people, they don't have these experiences of having to go across borders or across cultures.
Well, I think it's about the attitude and being humble at the beginning to say, maybe I don't have all the codes yet, and I will have to learn a few things before I can be part of this ecosystem. And I have a good example of that. When we started the business development in Germany, once I was in a networking event close to Düsseldorf, and then I contacted a few institutions to see if we would have a first call. And then, of course, I'm a business developer. I have something to sell. They know it. It's not like I'm hiding it. But in the attitude, I was saying, like, I would like to understand your context and what are maybe the problems you're facing and tell you what we are doing. And I just phrased it in a way that they say, okay, just come along and then we'll have a chat. And then I arrive. So I had a meeting at 11. I arrive at the entrance of this opera. And then the guy at the entrance is saying, oh, the journalist arrived. And I was like, hey, but I never said I was a journalist. But somehow in the way internally they perceive the idea of I come and we're asked questions. Maybe there was a bit of a misunderstanding, but I thought, ah, that's really funny because they probably said someone is coming along and will ask us some questions. And then the guy at the box office thought, oh, it should be a journalist. And then I was like, yeah, not really, but yeah, I'm coming. And then I came in, and then the meeting was actually totally normal. They had questions, they weren't embarrassed at all that I had something to sell, so it was fine. But their perception was like, she's coming to have more like a chat, like an interview, and we're comfortable with that. And the way they talked about it internally, it could have been a journalist who would write a blog article about them. And we have spent a lot of time at the beginning just to come into this ecosystem to say, look, we are confident we will be part of what's happening in culture in the next 5 years. But I just come to introduce myself to say why I think I have something relevant to tell and also a product to sell. And I want to understand where you are at the moment, how your ecosystem, your environment works. And I want to see how much sounds already familiar because I have done my homework and I know where I am, and how much is maybe a bit different. I will have to pay some more attention. And an example is that in the Netherlands, we work only in Dutch, and we could come and work in English, and there are many companies who do so, and many Dutch people would be comfortable with it. And maybe it would help because within the company, we have more people speaking English than people speaking Dutch. But this is kind of a philosophy that we want to be seen as part of the ecosystem. We are not Dutch people, so there will be differences and it's fine. We are not hiding it. But we decide that most of the interaction we'll have will be in the language of the country. And we have done that in many countries where we're expanding. So it's an extra constraint in re human resources because we hire people who speak very good Italian, Spanish, German, etc. But this is part of the strategy to take some time, come in, talk to people in their like daily environments, understand how it works, and say, look, we will be working together in the future. I know it already, but I'm not in a hurry. First, I can take the time to see where you are, and there are things you know I don't know, and I just take the time to catch up with that. So this has been our strategy, and by doing that, you will realize, oh, even in this like discovery phase, there are things that are surprising me, and I will keep that in mind for the next meetings.
100%, which that really is like a good way of introducing the idea of your strategy, because you talked about understanding people, and I th what I think this is one of the big reasons that if I have any success, it's partly this is why is the realization that like I have to understand what you're dealing with at the very start, because if I just come in with the expectation that I know, right? Like, I mean, and I think I'm kind of like you. I already know you're gonna get, eventually we're gonna work together. It's fine. I'm gonna get you there. It's fine. But I don't need it to be right this second. I'm cool with like having a little bit of time. So when you talk about needing to understand people, I think that's super important, and it's one of the philosophies, it's a philosophical thing about business. Most, I think, in again, we talked about culture. America, we just go, I have the solution. I'm going to give it to you, and I'm going to beat you over the head with it a little bit. I understand that because most of the time when I go places, people tell me, "Well, you're not like the other Americans," and I go, "Thank you very much." But let me ask you this. So then, when knowing that you have to, that you're coming in with a certain amount of humility, that you don't necessarily understand, or you don't think that you know everything at the very start. As you start to make this entrance into these more international markets, becoming a less French company, I think is the way you talked about it. What does success look like in the short and in the long term? Because a lot of times when thinking strategy, if the effects aren't immediate, you might change your mind and you might do something different. So how do what does success look like for you?
But the success is to have not just one project in one country, like one reference in another country in another language, but more like 5 or 10. So that's an important thing to remember. If you have just one or two, it's not that impressive. People might think, ah, but maybe they knew these people, so then I don't know, it doesn't say much. So I would say it, yeah, from like 5 projects and from different sizes, maybe different types of clients, then it says something. Then people can realize, oh, there have been a few times they could convince these people, and then maybe these people know each other, and it's becoming something. And once this is happening, not just in one or two countries, so you're not just in France and Belgium, but a bit more, then slowly your identity becomes like an international company. And I would say this happens usually around 10 countries, so it's quite a big threshold. But at the beginning, when we were in like three, four, five countries, first of all, it would be okay, but France, Switzerland, Belgium, they all speak French, it doesn't count. It's more like one market. And Swiss and Belgian people are used to use French solutions, so like it's not like a big achievement. And then the first reference in London was like, okay, but London is so big, you can always find a like tiny one who wants to do something. So you have to go a bit further than that. But I also have to say that maybe it was a bit of luck around COVID time. I mean, working in entertainment during COVID wasn't fun. Oh, don't misunderstand me. But because it was a huge crisis, I think to some extent, many people started to be more interested about other countries, even though before they didn't necessarily had strong connections with other countries. So you're stuck in lockdown in France, and you hear that some lockdown measures have become less in Austria, and suddenly you're interested because you think maybe what the Austrian people are discovering will help us in 2, 3 months. So it might be still interested and opportunistic and more about how is my life going to look like after this lockdown. But I think it helped to broaden the horizons of many people. And this is also the time where we started to become a bit bigger. So it started like in 2021, 2022. And then when in 2022, we started to say we have clients in 10 different countries in Europe, I realized that people were more curious and ready to hear about references in different countries. Where at the beginning, when you have two, three countries and you want to enter the fourth one, they don't really care about country two or three. But if you're in 10 countries, suddenly they're like, oh, wow, I'm talking to someone who knows about a very specific topic that is actually close to my daily life. And she has like 10 examples of things in 10 different countries. And I don't know, it sounds a bit exciting because there will be some differences. So, oh, okay, just surprise me. But there will also be some similarities. So, if she has seen things working in 10 different countries, and then she's coming to my country number 11, maybe she knows what she's talking about. And this was really interesting to observe how, at the beginning, talking about other countries was more like, ah, please, I'm not interested in this other country. And now it's really like an asset because, like, how often do you talk to companies who run a business in so many different environments? Like, I'm curious to hear. So, as you said, how much do you have in common between all these countries and how much is different and how do you deal with that? And this was really interesting to see if you want to open the country number 12, you already have the experience of 11 countries to share. And this becomes an asset. And it wasn't the case when you are at the beginning of the export. So this is something to keep in mind. First, we thought we work more like in grouping countries together. So there will be like the German speaking market and then the North American market and the Nordics and Benelux. And like we will help people to understand a market as a group of different countries. And it helps. And maybe you have some more interesting KPI to share, etc. But actually, the numbers of countries somehow resonates with people because maybe these are countries they associate more with holidays or movies, I don't know, but then it makes them travel a bit. And then suddenly you're talking to a prospect in Quebec, but they want to hear about how is it in the Netherlands and in Denmark and in Portugal and Italy. And you have things to say for all of them. And then suddenly, even if you're a small company with like just 50 people, it feels more inspiring than if you would just say we are the market leader in France.
Yeah, no. What I found interesting about your answer was, it seems that because of COVID, it made people that it was a huge crisis. I think it still remains a bit of a crisis, depending on where you're at. Either as a, as a health thing, but also for the business environment, and that you get more interest from other countries, which is true because, again, it was like everybody got very comfortable talking over Zoom or over Teams or whatever. And, it required people to expand their horizons. And then I was going to ask, I made the note here on my notepad, but you answered already. It was that has, I was going to ask if the openness had continued or it had expanded, and you said yes. So that was cool. Because one of the things that I'm kind of curious about is, because this is your experience of like working in all these different cultures, is why do you think everybody else is a lot more open? Because in the US, right, and this is going to be me asking it as a US person, we don't always do a good job of embracing outside ideas. Like we feel like, unfortunately, we have all the answers, which is 100% not true. I feel, I had this conversation with a parent of another one of my son's teammates on his soccer club, and he is a journalist. And we were talking about like, why does it feel like everybody needs to have all the right answers all the time, when really the truth of it is that like our ability to do well is comes from our ability to synthesize all these ideas from all over the place and bring them into a solution that fits our specific situation.
I think again, COVID made us put us in a crisis and then triggered our problem solver minds. Another example is, so we work with any organization within the entertainment. So before COVID, we had, I don't know, 50 sport clubs and 50 theaters. It's both about filling the stadium or the venue. And then sometimes we would like cross the success stories and say, okay, you're a football club, but there is also this big festival that at the end of the day also wants to bring 10,000 people in this specific place for a specific program, and there is a strong connection with the artist. And then back then, before COVID, it will be, I don't care about music. Either you're an expert in sport and you know my business and you tell me what to do in sport, or you're into music and then I don't care about music. Maybe we shouldn't talk. So there wasn't this strong curiosity about how does another industry do that, even though we are both about entertaining, right? And then suddenly in COVID, where there are all these restrictions about can we gather people or not, then I heard exactly this question. I would talk to a basketball club and they would tell me, okay, so in sport, I'm already checking what all my peers are doing because we're in this terrible crisis. So we have to look for ideas for solutions. And I'm a bit at the end of the possibilities I could imagine. I talk to all the people I know, they are all in sports. You're talking to people in festivals and in opera every day. Maybe you have some clues we could use. And I was like, really? So 2 years ago, I was doing that, and you would tell me, come on, either you know your business or you don't, and everything is working. So why should I look at music? But because we were in a crisis, suddenly we were just interested in any solution. And then it helped to think a bit out of the box. And this is how I think we also survive, because to be honest, in 2020, if you would ask the two founders of Aeronametrics, they didn't know if they would survive the crisis. And I think, again, it's about humility. They were like, okay, I see enough business related to entertainment that's actually, seeing it as like the end. But for us, it was more a moment to finally help raising the awareness of, okay, there is something in common in entertainment, and that's why our business is not for any type of organization. It's only within this world of entertainment, of bringing a visitor to a specific event or to an exhibition. And maybe before you weren't aware of it, you would say, oh, it's just a marketing strategy. It's like your sales pitch, but it doesn't really speak to me. But then through this crisis, suddenly there was a bit more room for that. So I would say this has been a way to use the crisis to say, we are all looking for what could be the next step so that we survive. And we can share that much resources we have. And among our portfolio, there are also organizations that are tiny different from you, but there is still like a common goal about bringing the audience to your stadium or to the venue. And that's how Yeah, we could grow in the markets where we were already, but also in other countries, because at the end of the day, the restrictions about COVID were the same everywhere. So when I was telling a use case of a French concert venue, then all the other concert venues in different countries and also in North America could relate. And this helped us actually to, yeah, also to grow and to export.
Yeah, you know this, and I'm hoping that anybody that's listening to this knows this, and then I'm hoping anybody that realize I'm hoping everybody realizes this. I don't know, I can't guarantee it, but I'm gonna explain it explicitly. That has been the whole premise of this podcast and the Talking Tickets newsletter is that you can learn a lot from selling theater tickets if you're in sports. And if you're in sports, you can teach the person in the theater or the museum or wherever a lot. And then all of us can learn a lot from all these other places. And that has always been the idea that I have tried to bring to the work that I do is that, like, going, a good idea can come from anywhere. It's your job to look for the idea that's going to work best for your organization. So hearing you talk about that was really, really good because there's a, because you do work in entertainment, you do work with I think, and you're gonna tell me if I'm wrong because I'm more likely than not about to be wrong and limit what I'm going to say for you. But you do work with theaters and concerts and sports.
Yeah.
But who who all what does your ideal client look like? Like who is who do you help the best?
Actually, we like not to choose because we like to think also of a kind of a solidarity between the bigger ones and the smaller ones. I think the visitors can enjoy both going to a very small festival and sometimes to a huge stadium for a Coldplay concert. So it's about what pleases the audiences, and it's also interesting to not see it as a competition, but to see it as an ecosystem. And when people decide to have some good time and go for a live event or to visit an art exhibition, it can be in a small or bigger institution. So, of course, as a company, you have to decide and make it sustainable. Do we offer something that's rather with low budget, and then there will be some part of the market that's interested, but maybe the bigger ones will think, oh, but it's only for small ones. Maybe they are not good enough for the flow and the amount of data we have, or the other way around. If we make something very complex with some fancy features, then the small ones will think, oh, it's too much. I will never understand this. So we try to do a bit of both. So I would say the ideal client, whether it's a big one or a small one, is someone who wants to work on the visitor experience and thinks it doesn't stop with the transaction. Of course, I'm happy to sell more tickets, but if I just see someone book the ticket, my job is not done because I want the whole experience to be great. And that's the best way actually to work on the audience retention. And it will always be easier and cost less money for me to make sure this person comes back, even if it's in 2 years, it's okay. It doesn't have to be next week. It will always be more efficient to make sure they have a great memory of all the steps from booking a ticket, entering, going to the bar and having a survey at the end, etc. Like all these steps, everything is smooth. And because they think of this experience as something pleasant, and it can be related to sport, to the artist, to the arts artworks or not, doesn't matter. It's about the experience. Then next time they think of let's do something, they might come back to the same venue, or at least they might decide, okay, I go again to sport games instead of just watching Netflix. And I think part of what makes Netflix very attractive is that the experience is great. I mean, it's easy to browse for content. It's easy to switch to the next episode. It's like super easy, huh? If you just want to binge watch, you don't have to do anything. It's just jumping to the next episode. Like all these things make it just nice. And maybe the content is great or not, but the experience matters. So I really understand people who sometimes would say, you know, I was a bit lazy. In the end, I watched Netflix instead of going for a concert. But I also know that booking a ticket for this concert is complicated, and I'm fine. I really don't judge and think, oh, but live event is always great than watching Netflix. I think if this concert venue would offer an experience as smooth as easy on Netflix, then the discussion would be different. So for us, the ideal client is someone who cares about that and who thinks, okay, we have a great program, we have great artists or a great team, but it won't be enough. Like, we have to please the customer, the audience, to make sure each step is pleasant and easy. And we can use digital tools for that. If we have an app and then there is some educational content that can be used while visiting the exhibition, great. So it's about live experience. We want people to come to our stadium, to our venues, to our museums. We like that. We want this to happen. We want social experiences to happen. Often you also go with friends. But digital tools can also be part of the experience, and then it's a mix. And we all have our cell phone in our pocket when we go to the cinema, and even if maybe we don't use it during the cinema, it's there. So it's like an asset. So I would say, yeah, having this focus on how can I make the visitor or fan experience one step ahead, like what is missing, what could be even better, independently of the game or of the exhibition or the show on stage, and how comfortable I am to see the whole digital realm as something that can help me, because now we are all digital natives, let's say, and there are some tools that can help me to make that even better. If people use it or not, it's okay. Even if just a small part of my audience is using this app we developed that is amazing, that's also fine. But how do I use the digital tools to come closer to this like amazing visitor journey I have in mind?
Oh, yeah. So this is great because then there was one other note I had here that I wanted to make sure I worked in, which you did a nice job of paving the path for me. Because I think I watched the recruiting video for Arenametrics, and they had a video of you, and you talked about how you bridged, you found out about tech not too long, the tech part of this of the business not too long ago, and how you were able to help bridge the gap between the people and the tech. And it sounds like what you've done is, besides the fact that, like, we know that I probably should ping you more regularly and be like, Selena, are you still watching Netflix? Just like the Netflix algorithm does. How do you teach people this? Because what you just described is like going, you're helping people see that it's a bigger world, right? And that it's not just you're selling the ticket, that's the end point. My research and my work tells me that the touch points that people have when they're deciding whether or not they're going to come to an event or go to a game or any of these things, the thinking about it or when it first comes onto their radar happens way, way earlier than people imagine. And then everything about it goes on much, much further into the future than people realize, right? So like there's that lingering effect that like going, I went and I went to see PSG last time I was in Paris, and I still think about it. That's still like popping up in my head, right? So knowing that your foundation is in people, but now you're in tech, how do you convey that? Because sometimes I feel there's a disconnect, and I feel that like somebody who has an understands the disconnect can explain it better to people because it's just like your philosophy, and how do you do that for people?
Well, maybe the experience of living abroad was a good training because it's already being a bit between two worlds, not necessarily the language, but also all the cultural environments and habits as we talked about it previously. So it's a bit like seeing our customers who sometimes are not really into data and might be a bit afraid or scared of, like, will I really follow this training? How much time will it take me to be comfortable in this software? Well, do I really want to use it every day? So let's say this is a country. It's like the country of entertainment, people who studied music or sport management, and this is their world. This is what they talk about. This is the type of content they watch on YouTube when they have free time. Like, this is their country. And then my colleagues are people who think of roadmap and new features and innovation, and they are just in another country, in another world, where they see many possibilities, and they have a knowledge that is goes far beyond my understanding, and that's fine. And I just travel like an ambassador from a country to another, trying to ask concretely, like a use case, okay, in which context would you need that and what would be the outcome? And then I try to process it in my own language, which is a bit in between. And then I go back to the developers or the other way around, where they say, look, this data, I can't process it this way. So let's see what should be actually the usage of it. And maybe what helps is to be, or maybe it helps to be a woman talking about tech, because there will be also some prejudice, or maybe this idea of like, but what's exactly your background? Like, I had this recently. I did a training in Switzerland in a small theater, and there were 10 people, like the marketing woman, but also the head of the theater, more in the 50s and maybe with a different background. And then we had this introduction about data-driven marketing and what is data and when is it valuable, when it is not, and what is quantity, what is quality. So for me, this is really like an entry-level training. And I didn't think I did like an amazing masterclass. And then at the end of the training, they asked me, but what did you study? Because I thought you would be more like from the social science side, and I feel like you understand our context, but the way you talk about data, probably you studied engineering. And then I say, well, I studied politics, so actually pretty far from data analysis and the data scientists. But it was interesting because they were like, how could you be comfortable talking about this without studying data science? And I was like, this can happen to you too. And I explained, like 6 years ago, I was like you. I wasn't working in a tech company. I was also a bit scared. In my job interview in the previous tech company where I worked, they asked me, like, but are you into tech? Like, do you like it? And I was like, yeah, I don't know. I come more from this like cultural planet or country where we don't really talk about it. So I don't know if I like it, right? And then it was part also of this discussion with this user to say, if I did it, I think you can do it too. And I didn't have to follow a lot of trainings to go into data science. I just know your context enough to see what kind of tools could make you reach what you need to do. So yeah, that's a way I think to be a bit in between. Of course, it's good to be curious, and I also see it as a chance to understand a bit more about product, about tech. When now they talk about API, I see a bit more what's behind. I think it helped me to, yeah, to be a bit more curious and to see how we live in a time where there are some more political aspects related to data privacy, to where do we store all this data, etc. So there is also my background in politics that can connect to data. So I think there are many bridges you can build from where you are, from your country, from your culture, to tech. And this is also a huge place. So there will be a place where somehow it speaks to you.
I believe that being able to, okay, so there's three things, right? If you're curious and you care about the people, and then you have the humility to like realize I don't understand everything, you can do a lot of really great work, right? So you can take all of these experiences that you've had and apply it to all these arts and sports and people who are trying to have an event. 100%. I think the more important thing is that like you have the mindset that helps pull all of these like things out of the air and pull them together and offer something unique to people. And I think that, that's to me what I think sounds was interesting about talking to you about what you're trying to do with your international expansion is that I wanted to show people, don't shut down an idea because it doesn't come from, the tried and true pattern that you have, right? There's a strength in bringing ideas from all over the world or from an outside source or for something that is unusual that can provide you this insight that can, change the trajectory of your business or your career or how you see something. And I think that's what's to me most interesting about you and about what you're doing with Arena Metrics, because the new ideas, right? The France is probably and my people, I'm gonna as soon as we release the podcast, I'm gonna get the hate mail from all over the world. I'm sorry, I love all of you, but France has like, probably one of the, if not the richest culture anywhere in the world, then it's got to be second or, the second, right? Which I don't know who would be more richly cultural than France, but all right, I'll leave the door open because I have a lot of friends in England. And I find this stuff amazing. And I'm really grateful that you spent the time talking to me, and everybody that's listening. So how can people find you? Where can people connect with you?
We have a website in different languages, so you can find some more information about Arenametrics in French, English, Spanish, Italian, German. So it's just arenametrics.com, and then you will find all you need to know about us. So it's about our identity, why we care so much about entertainment, about the different features we have built with our team of developers based in Paris. And about our expansion, what we discovered once working in different countries and even in a different continent with what we are doing at the moment in Quebec and New York. And we are pretty active on LinkedIn. So I would say if you just follow me on LinkedIn, you will hear about what we are doing about every week. And it could be me, but also our founders, Ludovic Bord and Kevin Vitoz, and the rest of the team that is based in very different countries. So I would say the website, LinkedIn, and then based on where you are in which country, then you will probably be someone part of the Arenametrics family you can connect with.
Yeah, I know from doing my research, it would always tell me that you were available to chat. So that's
Yeah,
great.
exactly.
So thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, thank you for the invitation. It was lovely talking to you.
Tell me what you think about my conversation with Solin by sending me an email. It is my name, dave@davewakeman.com. Make sure you check out my website, davewakeman.com, where you we'll find all kinds of new and interesting stuff. Remember, I talked about the upcoming things I'm going to be doing in New York and London and Sydney and Melbourne. And there's probably some surprises. It's all just a matter of me getting my act together and putting some of this stuff on the calendar, and finally locking in some of the dates with some of the people I have been talking to. Make sure that if you have not signed up for the Talking Tickets newsletter, which I don't know how you're listening to this podcast if you have not signed up for the Talking Tickets newsletter, make sure you get it at talkingtickets.substack.com or by visiting my website at davewakeman.com and filling in that little pop-up box. Or you can always do it the old-fashioned way and send me an email and say, Dave, put me on those damn newsletters of yours. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Do you, or did you, sorry, not do you, did you enjoy the little special edition Talking Tickets that I did with Brian Ralston, where he talked about group sales? I kind of want to do more of those. I want to share some different voices, some different ideas. Many of you are already going to have received emails personally from me, where I say thank you and I ask you what I can do to make the podcast and newsletter more effective for you. If you have not received that email from me already, go ahead and send me an email, dave@davewakeman.com, and let me know what I can do for you to help make the newsletter and podcast more effective, more helpful, more useful for you. If not, I will get you that soon enough. But let me know. One of the things, there's been a couple things, really exciting, interesting things that have come through from you so far, is how, as a nonprofit arts organization, you can better make the case for marketing investment that's comparable to the style of things that corporations do. How you can switch make the switch from sales-driven tactics to some marketing-building tactics in selling the arts. Strategy of group sales, which is where Brian came in. Questions about the business of soccer. How to market B2B effectively, the timelines of B2B sales, product launches, product developments, all kinds of great stuff. So I want to hear even some pricing questions, which God forbid I don't answer a pricing question for a couple of days. I'm happy to do it. Send me those questions. Send me those ideas. Send me the things that you want to learn or you need to know about to help make this newsletter and podcast more effective for you. Don't hesitate. I do this for you as much as I do it for me. So I want to know. Send me the note, dave@davewakeman.com. And as always, I'm going to get out of here fast today. And I'm going to say thank you so much for being here. Let me know who you'd like me to talk to going forward to. Let's do the podcast. Let's get this thing rolling and bumbling along. All right. I'll talk to you soon. Take it easy.